Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
You're back in the House of Mystery, and we are talking turkey today. So, on the interview, we have an author that's written about his experience, you might say, and we'll get right into it. So, we're talking about the book Turkey Street, and Jack and Leah moved to Bodrum. Jack, Scott, thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, now, let's talk about your writing. There was two books, I believe.
Yes, indeed.
What brought you to actually write and share your experience? What was it that made you do that?
Okay. Well, when we moved to Turkey, which is a few years ago now, we moved there in 2008, the end of 2008. We kind of semi-retired, or at least we retired early, ridiculously early, really, from a couple of very busy lives in London with busy jobs and we decided to give it all up. And then we moved to Turkey, and it was fantastic. It was a wonderful place, and we rented a wonderful house that overlooked the Aegean Sea, and you know, we had the most glorious sunsets. But after about 6 months, we got a bit bored looking at the sunsets, as gorgeous and as wonderful as they were. One lesson that we learned about living overseas is that a lot of people, a lot of expats, see it as focus on the journey rather than the destination. So they see it as I want to go and live in the sun. So they make plans to go and live in the sun, and it's a fantastic thing they do. But when they get there, they haven't really thought about what they're going to do. And everybody needs an occupation. Everybody needs something to do, something to get out of bed for in the morning. And we did get a bit bored, so we didn't have an occupation. So a friend of mine said to me, well, lots of interesting things were happening around us. We met lots of interesting people. Why don't you start blogging? So I'd never blogged before. I'd never really thought about it. But I started to blog. And almost overnight, the blog became instantly popular. I don't know why. You know, even to this day, I can't understand why people were possibly interested in my random ramblings about our lives in Turkey. But in a period of about 4 or 5 months, it became the most popular English language blog in Turkey, of its type. Obviously, there are more popular blogs around things like travel and archaeology, because Turkey is a great place for that sort of thing. But in terms of a kind of gossipy narrative of life in Turkey, it became extraordinarily popular. So I was approached by a publisher who thought that there might be a book in it. So, okay, I thought, I never even thought about that. Why not? So I started writing it, and the first book, which was called Perk in the Pansies, which mirrored the name of the blog, was published in the end of 2009, and did very, very well. So that's kind of how I got to write the book, about our time there. It was an interesting time, interesting for us. A lot of the theme really was because we were a gay couple. We'd recently married in London, and we'd in effect emigrated to what is a Muslim country, a Muslim majority country, and a lot of people were interested in that kind of angle. What were we doing there? How would people respond to us? How would people react? And you know, I kind of wrote a little bit about that too. I tried to keep it light and frothy, but there was also some interesting things that came out as we lived there too.
So right.
That's kind of how it got there.
Well, first of all, what brought you to Turkey? Like, why did you guys go there?
Purely practical reasons. I've been traveling to Turkey for a number of years on holiday. So I knew the country reasonably well, but only as a tourist. And I'm a little bit of a history buff, and I do like ancient history. And of course, in Turkey, there's a kind of ancient site on every hill. You know, the place is littered with ancient cities. So I've always been attracted to it, and so I knew about Turkey. I knew a little bit about its history. I knew about its people. I knew, even though it's a Muslim country, it's a secular Muslim country. So, and for example, homosexuality is not even mentioned in the Turkish penal code. It's not Saudi Arabia. It's not Iran. It's completely different. And I liked it very much. And we actually also had our honeymoon there. So we spent 2 wonderful weeks. On honeymoon there, and I've been there with previous partners and never had a difficult time or a poor response from the people around us. People are always delightful. That was one of the reasons. Another reason was we only had so much money to spend, and Turkey was at the time a relatively cheap destination. So we knew we could live there on the funds that we had.
Weren't you worried about going to a Muslim country, being that, you know, being a gay couple is not exactly appropriate for them in the Muslim religion?
It's not, but as a secular country, we were protected under the law. And there is a great tradition amongst Muslim countries or Islamic religion of hospitality. So, and also, Turkey is one of the major destinations for British tourists. And we didn't go to a remote area of Turkey. We went to Bodrum, which is a very Western-leaning, very Western resort on the Aegean. So we knew what we were doing. I have to say, ironically, I suppose, it's the only bad vibe we ever got from anybody about us was from our fellow expats, not from the Turks we lived around, or they lived around us. And in Bodrum, in fact, we lived in two places in Turkey. We rented a house in a small resort called Yelikovac near Bodrum, and then after a year we moved into Bodrum town itself. And we lived, we rented a house from an elderly Turkish couple. We lived next door and around lots of Turkish people, and I can say we never got a bad experience from anyone. We did get responses from some of the expats, maybe because they were a generation above us, maybe because they were conservative thinking. So that's the only time we ever felt uncomfortable. And I'd say that with sincerity. Honestly, the Turkish people were open and welcoming to us. But then, of course, we weren't Turkish. Had we been Turkish, it might be a different situation.
Right. What was the biggest surprise then? What was the, what shocked you or you just didn't expect?
I don't think there was anything we didn't expect at all. In fact, as I said, I'd personally been going to Turkey for about 15 years regularly. So we lived in a western leaning part of Turkey. So there weren't any surprises in it for me at all, particularly. It was a very easy transition.
Wow. How did your life change then? Like, what was different about your life in Turkey? Of course, other than the weather, and it's not going to rain so much and all that stuff. But
well, Well, you think, do you? That's actually not entirely true. One thing I'd say, it's interesting what you say about what surprised me. I have just thought of something. Nobody ever tells you that the Mediterranean in January isn't that pleasant. That is not written in the brochures.
No.
We had the most enormous storms. And we, in Bodrum in particular, we had water running down the streets, and floods, and biblical proportions. It was extraordinary. I mean, I live in England. England is known for rain, but nothing prepared us for the rain that was going to be coming down in Turkey during January and February. It's a very short winter. It's a short, sharp winter. It's not particularly cold, but it's also not particularly warm. And Turkish houses aren't really built for cold. Not like Canadian houses, and to a certain extent British houses. So there was no heating in the winter, so we had to find different ways in which to stay warm. So that was a bit of shock, to be honest, and it just occurred to me after you asked the question, because, as I say, nothing is written about how it can be like. We visited Istanbul while we were there, and it snowed, and I wasn't expecting it to snow in Istanbul. Winters can be harsh. Yeah. But in terms of the way our lives changed, I think we had fairly high powered jobs, I guess, in London. We both had careers, and we gave all that up, and we also gave up the salaries that go with it. The thing we learned to do is live better with less, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So the quality of our life increased, even though we had much less in terms of disposable income. And it's easy to do that in Turkey because the cost of living is much lower than it is in Western Europe. And we learned to cook properly. You know, we stopped buying convenience food because you can't really buy convenience food. You know, you have, when you go to the supermarkets there, or you go to the markets, you buy fresh vegetables, you buy fresh produce, and you cook from scratch. That's kind of how everybody does it. So we kind of learned to do that. I mean, Liam is my husband. He's quite a good cook anyway, so we kind of knew how to do that. I'm not the best cook in the world. But so you learn to do that, and you learn to slow things down, and you learn to spend more quality time on the things that you want to do. But I guess we were kind of living on about a quarter of our income,
right,
being used to. And then when we came back to England, we brought that mentality back with us. So we didn't go back to work in the same way. And we do work, but it's not the same. And so our salaries are much less. And therefore, you know, we used to spend lots of money on expensive holidays and what have you. Can't do that anymore. But I think we did better. The quality is better. So that's one lesson that we did learn, and something that we brought with us.
So that was kind of a major change for you. So it kind of made you look at how you lived your life.
Yes, I think it did. Absolutely did. You know, your priorities change. Not to dwell on it, but we've had some recent deaths around us in the last recent years, and it made us think that, it could be us. We could be dead tomorrow. So let's kind of live a life that makes us happy, and that isn't always about material things.
Yeah.
Everybody needs the basic minimum. Everybody needs to be able to, you know, heat, light, and what have you. But and I'm not trying to preach poverty here. It's just, but it's about slowing down. We were on a really, really bad treadmill in London, in the sense it was a very fast life. We had busy jobs, we were tired all the time, you know, and then we used to spend loads of money on going on expensive holidays, and we just don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So we go for walks, you know, and we go to the pub and have a slow pint, and we have, you know.
So it's actually really changed your life in a way.
Absolutely. In a way that most people don't get a chance to do. We did it very early. I mean, I think I would have been 49 when we left, and people don't generally retire at 48 and 49, so we got to do it early, and we managed to maintain that, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's amazing. What brought you back then to the UK?
Family issues in the main, mostly Liam's family. His parents were elderly and both had developed dementia. And Liam also had a profoundly disabled brother, And things started getting quite difficult for the family, so we came back to help. Sadly, all three of them have now died. So it's been quite a rough, from that point of view, it's been quite a rough few years. But it's, so in a sense, we jumped out to Turkey. It was a window of opportunity. We grabbed it while we could, because we always knew, we always did know that things would drag us back. We took the opportunity when we could.
Within Turkey, now, so how did you find gay life? Like, what was the lifestyle like there? Was there gay communities, gay clubs, all that, or what? Try to explain that, maybe.
Yeah, it's not quite. There are, in Istanbul, there are traditional style gay bars and clubs that we would all recognize. But elsewhere, you won't really find that. Sexuality can be quite ambiguous in the Muslim world, so it isn't always obvious. We didn't indulge at all. We were very happy being together, so we didn't need a gay scene, and we didn't seek one out. We did know some gay people while we were there, and made friends with some gay people, but it wasn't something that was important to us. So there were lots of discreet liaisons going on, and some discreet bars.
Right.
But a kind of Western gay scene doesn't really exist outside the main cities. So that's not that uncommon, though, even right. in Western countries. I'm sure in Canada there isn't a gay bar in every corner. You know, so and certainly in Britain, you know, it's kind of moved on a bit now, hasn't it, really? The gay scene isn't quite what it used to be, because LGBT people in Britain are much more accepted. There is, in a sense, less need for a gay scene.
Right. It is more mainstream now in society. Yes. I'd say for Canada and Britain, in the States in certain parts, but not all.
Yeah, of course.
And the apps, you know, people meet online, things like that. So,
well, I've always said, you know, primarily when I was younger, you used to go to a gay bar to pick up on a Saturday night, truthfully. I mean, you know, you don't need to do that anymore. So, you know, you can use the apps. It's a lot cheaper. Why spend, you know, Saturday night propping up a bar in the hope of meeting somebody? It's expensive. It's a bit of a faff, isn't it, really? You have to get there, get back when you can, you know.
Yeah.
So a lot of gay bars in London in particular have closed down because, frankly, people just don't go out like they used to.
Right. But if they've never really had that, did you see a difference in the way that they interact with each other?
Well, Muslim societies are different in the sense that they're fairly patriarchal and they're quite male orientated. So you often will see men in Turkey walking down the street holding hands, but that doesn't make them gay, and it doesn't mean they're in a gay relationship. It's a much more subtle society where it's not as obvious, it's not as black and white, it's not as as simple as that. It's much more nuanced. And so sexuality is much more less defined, or traditionally was less defined in Muslim countries, because traditionally women didn't leave the home. Traditionally they stayed at home. Traditionally they were virgins when they got married, and traditionally they were kept away from work, the world of work. So it was a very male environment, and things used to happen there, I guess. I've never been involved in it because, but
you were a virgin at home for a while, weren't you? Or
life, it's very different. People think that it ought to be the same, or they're expecting something which is the same, and it's not the same. For me, you know, maybe I would have thought that way too. I mean, I came out in the 70s in London. I've always been out, really. I was 16 when I first came out, and I had a very supportive family, and that was all fine. But things were very gay or not gay in those days. When you go to a country where that's much more nuanced and much more the boundaries are less clear, you have to play the game much in a very different way. And so you could have sex with a man in Turkey and in other Muslim countries too, but they would never say they were gay. And often in
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
In Muslim countries, it's only the passive partner who's gay anyway. That's the way they see it. If you're active, you're not gay. It's a different way of looking at it. I'm not defending it. It's weird to me too, because as I said, you know, as a 70s boy, but it's a different way of looking at it, and you have to accept that that's the way it is. Otherwise, there's no point being there. It didn't trouble us at all, because we used to have Turkish men that we were friends with, and we knew were probably gay, but it just never came up in conversation at all, because it's not a conversation you have.
So how did you ever feel threatened there?
No, not once, not ever. And, you know, Bodrum's a big tourist town. You know, people go to Bodrum from all over, particularly all over Europe. It's very popular with Germans and with Dutch. No, absolutely not. The only problem we had was trying to learn Turkish, because living in a tourist town, we did try to learn Turkish. It's a very complex and difficult language to learn, but we did try, but we found that everybody wanted to try the English on us.
Right.
So you want to have a conversation with Turkey in very, very bad, broken, poor Turkish, and they were wanting to practice their English on you, which is interesting, really. So our mastery of the Turkish language was profoundly disappointing.
You know, when you go to a country like Turkey, you know, and all the ups and downs countries have, were you ever worried about it becoming military or having some sort of catastrophe happening?
Oh, all the time. Turkey has a glorious history of military coups. Yeah. If you know anything about Turkish history, mostly right-wing military coups, and at the moment they have a particular nasty piece of work as a president called Erdogan. And his party is kind of conservative Islamist. It's very different from Iran and Saudi Arabia. We're not talking about, you know, that kind of extreme form of Islam, but it's a conservative Islam. I kind of see it very much as maybe some equate it with American evangelists.
Right.
Who are quite, you know, preachy and you know, it's all Bible, 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 and they're saying it's Quran, Quran, Quran. But he has at least respected the Turkish secular constitution, which was established by Ataturk back in the 20s and 30s. I mean, it's interesting that, you know, in Britain, for example, people get married in the church. I'm sure that's true in Canada too. They get married in a church or a or a synagogue or a temple. That is completely unacceptable in Turkey under the constitution. All marriages are civil. So you, and in France the same is true, in fact. You can't get married in not people do tend to get married in mosques, but you can't have a religious ceremony. It's not recognised by the state. That's quite interesting when you think about it. So it's not dominant. Islam isn't dominant in that sense, in the way that it is in the UK when people get married in church, but that's a religious ceremony.
Right. So the religion isn't necessarily what, you know, what do you say, gives the marriage credence. It's more of the law part.
It's the law. And that's actually true in most countries, even in the UK, and I said it certainly must be true in Canada too, and the US. Actually, the legal part of getting married in Britain is the signing of the register.
Right.
Everything else is rubbish. You know, it's all dressing up. You know, it's all the words that you can say and what have you. It's all wonderful stuff, and we went through that and we had a fantastic time. But actually, the only legal bit is the signing of the register. And that's done, and in a church in this country, it's done in a church, but it's done at the permission of the state. So it's not run by the Church of England or whatever church it might be. It is actually the state that says that you're acting as agents of the state, if you like. So most people don't realise that. It's the state that controls marriage in most countries. And so the religious bit is just dressing, really.
Yeah. What would you recommend for people to do the same thing you did, like to go to somewhere like Turkey and live for a while?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say Turkey now. I mean, I think Turkey has taken a turn, which is unsure where it's heading. As I said, it's got a glorious history of military coups, and there was an attempted coup in recent years, which failed. And, you know, I don't approve of coups. As far, whatever you might say about Erdogan, he was democratically elected, you know.
Yeah,
and so, you know, his time though will pass. Like these things happen, you know, like Trump, his time will pass.
Hopefully,
His time will pass, and then things will change. But I wouldn't necessarily recommend Turkey right now, because we're in a different world now, economically, because of the pandemic. Who knows what the shape of things will be in the future. I would recommend nobody do anything for the moment.
did you feel like they did they have fairly decent medical or support there?
Absolutely, yes, sorry, if you're talking about the practicals, Turkey does have a very good state-run medical service, but there is also private medical treatment if you wish, if you want to pay for it, and it's very economic and very compared to Western countries. It's a steal. I did have my teeth completely redone in Turkey for a very small amount of money compared to what you'd have to pay for in England. But no, the state system is pretty good. It's pretty good.
Wow. Well, there you go. I'll head there now.
Well, you love it. I mean, they've got a huge tradition of hospitality. Food is fantastic. I mean, Turkish cuisine is one of the four great cuisines of the world. If you're interested in history, the place just oozes it. You know, there are more ancient Greek cities in Turkey than there are in Greece. Because, of course, the Greek world expanded. Bodrum itself is old Halicarnassus. We lived up the road from one of the ancient wonders of the world, which was the mausoleum of Halicarnassus. And so that was up the street from us. So we came out of our door, we could walk up the street, and there it was. Not much left, not much to see, it has to be said. But there you are. We lived on the same street as one of the ancient wonders of the world. So if you're into that kind of thing, and not everybody is, but if you are, it's a fantastic place. Certainly a fantastic place to visit. And I would urge people to go because economically they kind of need the money right now.
Yeah.
They really, really do. And things are really tough. The lira's taken a huge, huge hit. When we first went to Turkey, the lira was about 3 lira to the pound. Now it's 8. So, you know, the currency has dropped through the floor. And that really, really affects people's lives.
Yeah, totally. So when someone reads your book, when someone picks up one of these two books, what do you hope that they walk away with?
Well, I think I hope that they find it funny. they're both funny. They're meant to be funny. It's a kind of jokey thing, but wrapped up in some serious stuff too. I do talk about serious stuff. I think it gives people a sense that that with the right attitude, with a sense of adventure and an open mind, that gay people, particularly these gay people, can live, if you choose well, can live in a place and live very well, and be accepted. And I think that's what we were. So I'm very grateful for that.
Really interesting. What do you miss most?
The weather, you mentioned earlier, I have to say. You know, the spring weather is fantastic. The autumn weather is fantastic. The summers were very, very hot. And the winters were much colder than I imagined they would be. But yeah, the weather, I think the outdoor life, the food is fantastic. The fact is that you can travel, because of its geographical location, you can travel to Asia really easily, which we did a little bit of. That you can, the architecture, the history, the wonderful ambience. We lived in Bodrum, which has got a fantastic ambience. It's a wonderful place to live. So I do miss that. I think that's it, really.
Where do you want to go next? Or are you giving that up?
We're very happy where we are. We live in a very pretty little village. And, you know, I'm 60 this year, so I'm kind of retired, really. And I really like where we live. I mean, it's more about travel now. I say I must make it to Canada. I have relatives in Canada. I've been to the States a few times, but I've never been to Canada. I must make it to Canada before I die.
Well, yeah, it's a good place. It's like the States, but nice.
Yes, it's the States with healthcare.
Yeah, with healthcare and people smile and a lot less violence. That's for sure.
Yeah, sure. You know. It's a bit rough in the winter.
Well, it depends on where you are. In the West we don't really get much winter, so. It rains.
Where are you exactly?
Well, my main home, I'm in the Kelowna area, so I'm in the desert part of Canada, which the Sonora Desert runs out of the States up through the middle part of BC, British Columbia in the west.
Okay, yeah.
And it's surrounded by two mountain ranges, so what happens is that desert stays fairly desert, so it's pretty warm, and All the wineries are here, and all the fruits grown here. It's kind of like wine country, fruit country. So it's
sounds wonderful.
It is actually, and so winter doesn't really affect us here. We don't really get much. We do get some rain, of course, and stuff like that.
Sure.
But it's nothing major, you know.
I used to work with a woman from Vancouver, and she said it rained a lot in Vancouver.
Oh yeah, rain.
So she came to London. She said, "I'm quite at home here. It's fine."
Yeah. yeah. Vancouver and London are very similar. It rains a lot, but they're right in the right on the ocean there, right in the coast.
Yeah,
so, you know, a lot of rain there. But it's a good place. It's a good place overall. It's really good. But are you going to write some more, or are you kind of done writing?
I'm kind of done, really. What I found that although the books did well, particularly the first book, Perky in the Pansies, did extremely well, and I'm very grateful for that. It sort of caught the imagination. Some fantastic reviews and some really, really positive feedback. Totally unexpected. You know, I'm a nobody. You know, nobody knows who I am. I'm just a guy that lived in Turkey for a while. And the fact that somebody would want to read my campbell nonsense is fantastic. But what I found was that although it did very well, it's not going to make money to any large extent. You know, it did well, but. So I ended up, ironically, working in partnership with my publisher. So now I work with her because we run a small, very small but niche publisher that publishes expat-related books. She came to me and offered me a publishing contract. It was her company. And then a couple of years down the road, I had worked for her. I did a few bits of work for her. She said, "Would you like to come into partnership with me?" So I did. And now I spend my time managing other people's books.
There you go.
So, yeah. And I found out that you know, you make more money working with other people than you do in your own stuff. So there you go.
Yeah, it can be that way for sure.
Yeah. So we publish 5 to 10 books a year, expat-related books. Some do very well, some do not so well. You know, so so I'm constantly proofreading and checking and publishing and doing all sorts of stuff on behalf of other authors now. Yeah. And I quite enjoy doing it, really, and it keeps me out of the pub.
So when you deal with that, so you're focusing on expat. So are we talking about just travel, or are we talking about?
It's about the expat experience, about living abroad. So that could be a memoir like my own. So it could be somebody that talks about where they live. So, for example, we have a couple of titles, which is about living in Spain. We have another title, very popular title about living in the Dominican Republic. So it could be a memoir about people's experiences of the expat world, but it also could be something a bit more academic. It could be around what's called third culture kids, which is the experience of children growing up in cultures which are not their own, or countries in which their parents weren't born. That typically might be somebody who works for Shell, for example, and who has children and then has assignments all over the world, children in various international schools along the way. It could be about that experience. That can be quite alienating for younger people. So we have quite a few titles that look at that issue and examine that issue. Or it could be travel. So, you know, one of our most popular books is about, moving to Catalonia in Spain. And it's called a travelogue kind of thing. So anything that is related to the expat experience and travel too is something that we're interested in publishing.
So what's okay, let's give your website now. What's the website for you, or do you have one, or maybe your publisher?
My website is, for my own books, is jackscott.info. But our publishing company is summertimepublishing.com.
Wow. Well, that's fantastic. What I'll do is I'll make sure that's put up on our website. People listening can just click and find you.
Thank you.
And if they want to send you a good note, that's great. our guest has been Jack Scott for the interview, and we're talking about Turkey Street. We're talking about his two books and publishing. Thank you for being here, Jack.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com. houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.